Hello and welcome to the Nerd Alternative, a sweet melting pot of all things nerdy. Today you're joined by me, Ram.
Me, Hassan.
And myself, Sir Levington the Fourth.
Oh, so
round of applause. Golf claps.
So today we are here to talk about two films that have come out recently with Black majority cast, a black film, you might say, you might not say. I mean, one of them is definitely a black film. The other one, debatable.
It's black enough. Yeah. Black
enough. So these films are Coming to America, coming to America, and Judas and the Black Messiah. They're both quite different films, but we thought, you know,
that is an understatement.
Yeah.
If ever. understatement.
We thought that since they're, you know, both, I guess, a sign of, you know, black people being able to make more films, we might as well talk about both of them, even though they are on quite like opposite ends of the spectrum.
So I feel like almost diametrically opposed. Like, yeah. they kind of, the historical kind of elements of like the Black Panther movement and Coming to America, yeah. Like,
they are an antithesis of each other, you know. Mm. But it's always good to kind of talk about these things and show people that, you know, there is an interest and there's
absolutely.
The biggest issue is, especially even like with comics and stuff, like people talk about wanting black things, and it's like there's so many black comics and stuff, and people make black content. We don't want it. You want the mainstream people to hand it to you. Mm-hmm. So it's good to show that we watch these things.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
We do.
We're gonna have some words.
Yeah, many words.
I'm gonna tell you how great Coming to America is.
My favorite film, top film of the year. Awards. You know, they were snubbed at the Oscars, to be honest with you.
Who, Eddie Murphy?
Wait, Coming to America.
Yeah, best lead.
Yeah, best lead. Duh. But before we get into that, let's talk about some world news. It's not actually world news, it's nerd news.
Breaking news.
Zero
TV.
I'll just do it. Anyway. So Black Adam recently had some casting news go out. We've got Pierce Brosnan as Dr. Fate.
I just find that so...
I was betrayed by the fact that for ages I didn't know that he was Irish, you know?
Yeah, that was the wildest thing I found out in that Jackie Chan movie.
Me too! And I was like, what? And then I was like, oh, he's doing a really good Irish accent. And then for some strange reason I looked it up and he was like Irish British, and I was like, what?
I didn't know Irish English. I didn't know David Tennant was Scottish.
Oh,
that I knew because I've seen him in like a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. I'd only seen him in Doctor Who. So yeah,
I did feel betrayed, like, because I saw him in Doctor Who, then I found out he was Scottish and I was like, what?
So Pierce Brosnan as Dr. Fate, Aldis Hodge as Hawkman.
We love Aldis.
Hawkman.
I said this, remember back in the One Night in Miami episode? Yeah. I called it. Also, go watch that episode. It's a very good episode.
It is very good. And watch the film if you haven't.
Mm.
You both. Noah Centineo. You know, guys, the heartthrob dude as Atom Smasher. The way that Levi and Hassan both don't know who he is.
Yeah,
he's the latest
viciously
teenage.
Googling him now.
He's the latest teenage heartthrob. He was in To All the Boys I Ever Loved and all those kind of weird, kind of rubbish movies, basically.
So the stuff I don't watch and a demographic that I'm not part of.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I'm no longer a teenage girl, but I will always be a teenage girl.
I don't think I was ever one.
Oh, so he's in all of those.
Give me like a week.
All of those Netflix films, basically. Yeah.
Which is, I don't know how I feel about that, because I don't really think he's a good actor, to be honest with you.
Well, you don't know.
But sometimes, to be fair, you do find that like an actor will, for example, Taylor Lautner in Cuckoo was really good. Like, that was a really good combination. But everything else that I've seen him in kind of wasn't. It was a bit.
I've got another one for you in exactly that vein. Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
I hated him like early on, and like he had that renaissance where he came back with True Detective and like pretty much all those movies that he's been doing since, like Lincoln Lawyer and all of them. He's just been like phenomenal.
Dallas Buyers Club.
Yeah, he was.
Love that film, Dallas Buyers.
That film's amazing.
Yeah. But also I don't know much about Atom Smasher myself, so he might fit that role.
Yeah. So yes. We'll see. And Quintessa Swindle, who I don't know from anything.
I love that name though.
That name is amazing. It's so cool.
As Cyclone.
What was she in?
Yeah.
Trinkets.
She's in some Netflix show, teen drama called Trinkets.
Oh, this is and Euphoria.
Oh, and she was in Euphoria, but it seems like not for the whole series, for an episode. So
yeah. Seems like this could be her
big break.
Yeah.
Yeah. In other DC news, the Suicide Squad trailer dropped.
Yeah, it was funny, man.
I'm in.
Yeah, same.
I have no love for the first one. I haven't even seen it, and I don't have really.
You have seen it.
It was on, and I was in the room when it was on.
Okay, fine.
That is the most accurate thing I can say. I don't even.
It happened to me. I didn't actually go out and watch it.
It was me, technically. Well, I was like, my bed.
Well, yeah. So.
I watched it with some friends, and we had like a rip roaringly like good time, just taking the piss out of it. Like as we were watching it, it was good fun that way.
I watched it with my brother in cinema, I think.
What do you think of this new trailer, Hassan?
I'm like biased. I like James Gunn and I like his style and his kind of humor. So I'm definitely in. I'm also like trying to be like less pessimistic about like comic book movies and DC, and I'm trying to kind of keep an open mind. So hopefully this is good. Like that's my vibe. It
looks good. If anything,
it looks fun.
It does seem like it could. It seems like there was a very heavy like Guardians kind of vibe on it,
yeah,
even down to the fact that you have a shark that seems to be Groot, like the shark version of Groot.
I am shark.
Yeah, essentially. But I'm looking for it.
Yeah, I do also trust James Gunn with ensemble pieces. Though I do feel like DC makes me want to watch trailers less than just watch the movie when it comes out, so that I have zero expectations. So. HBO confirms that The Last of Us show will cover season one.
Yeah, so for all you neckbeards, there will be no strong girlfriend.
Yeah.
Wait, for me, you mean?
Because
I want to.
I just
that's all I'm here for.
I didn't choose which fish went in the net. Now,
listen, you don't have to at me, bro.
I know people are mad about, I forget her name, Abby. So,
yeah. No, she's the best, man. I'm a super fan here. That's my position.
Fair I'm enough. Like, I mean, well,
she's the Tiger Woods of the Last of Us universe.
you won't see her. I mean, anyway,
who,
yes.
Were you trying to
I was
going to
say who
would
cast
her,
but I'm thinking the woman that I guess done.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great segue into the Ghost of Tsushima. It has a film in development with the John Wick director.
Yes,
I saw on Twitter like people talking about like who can we cast, and people were like. The guy who played him in the game, and I was like, oh, yeah.
I was concerned he was about to say Keanu Reeves.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. If we don't see a Japanese man, what is
hey, he? Dude, I'm here, I'm the ghost. The ghost is a Shima.
I feel like they, but then I feel like a lot of the times they don't like they'll pick an if they can find an actor that will fit the role that might be a bigger name, they might. Like, I don't, just a random name, like, just Steven Yeun, or just a random, like, aim that's, like, everyone will be like, okay, cool, they can see that guy be the character. They probably go for that.
Yeah.
Almost like Ahsoka Tano. A lot of people wanted the voice actor to play her in Mandalorian, but obviously they got my girl instead.
Rosario Dawson, who is amazing. Like, I'm always here for, like, more Rosario Dawson. She's an amazing actress.
Yeah.
And then Marvel has decided to distribute with Penguin.
Yes, down with the monopoly.
Yep. So.
Down with capitalism.
This is on brand.
I mean, we spoke about this earlier this year when DC decided to kind of break away from Diamond and distribute themselves, which was a little bit of a shaky start for them. But now that Marvel are kind of distributing with Penguin, it's almost just creating like the market, isn't it? Like now Diamond always have had kind of weird practices like no refunds and things like that, which lead people to have to do a lot of weird and wild speculation on what they order and stuff. So it's nice to see other options being put on the table, and we love Penguin, you know, as well.
I know.
Absolutely.
We got a good reputation. So, and it might cause Diamond to change some of their practices as well. And, you know, I think it's definitely a good move for the industry as a whole, because Diamond have proper been like gangster mafia type settings when it comes to this.
Yeah. Comics. It's like super corrupt and it's like poisonous for the entire industry. Like we've seen like how many comic runs have died because of their distribution practices. It's time for a change.
Exactly that. So good things.
Wait, guys, diamonds apparently then aren't forever.
That's fine with me because I've never liked diamonds anyway. Fake.
Don't let Kanye West hear you say that.
He will come to your house.
Come to my house.
Okay.
Okay. We are on to the main event. Sorry, this is going to be a wacky episode because the energy levels are feeling a bit floofy. So we are going to talk about our two films. We have talked before about like our thoughts on black, quote unquote, cinema. In our episode of Malcolm and Marie, which you should definitely go and listen to, where we kind of discussed, you know, like, what does black cinema even mean? Should we really be using that term, etc., etc.? So we won't really like reiterate on that because we don't have time. So first, we're going to talk about Coming to America.
The goat. Or a goat.
Okay, let me get my notes because I had so many notes.
Which was produced by Eddie Murphy and Kevin Mischer. Written by Barry Blaustein, who wrote the first film, and Kenya Barris, who is the creator of Black-ish and Black AF. The film was filmed in Rick Ross's mansion in Georgia, which I just find
hilarious. Do you know how many memes and vines I just see of him just cooking in his house, just riding around his house?
I mean, it's the way he looks at the camera that
he's like, yeah. it's like naughty in a childish way.
Yeah, like he's got caught doing something he shouldn't have been doing.
The costume designer was Ruth E. Carter, everyone's favorite costume designer, who worked on Black Panther and also things like Malcolm X, Spike Lee's Malcolm X, so you know. And this film was actually announced, the sequel was announced in 2017 with the original producers, but they hadn't confirmed that the cast were returning until 2019. No one asked for it, but I mean, here we are. So first, let's go into kind of just general non-spoiler thoughts. I'll go first because I mean, I feel like I've just got maybe a more negative.
I feel like you're both, I mean, I'm negative. I mean, yeah. I'm neutral.
I think I'm negative in a different way. I'll just go first and then basically, my history with Coming to America is I've never really liked the film. I think that like, as someone who is from Africa or of African descent, it did always feel like, I guess like, you know, I think most African children growing up in like a Western country always kind of feel quite like defensive about our portrayals of our culture, just because there's so much like, it was often like getting made fun of, like you're so used to it being attacked or like, you know, that's weird, or like African being like a negative connotation. So
it's like a byword for being a savage.
Yeah. You know,
there's taboo to it.
So I think that the first movie never really quite sat right with me, to be honest, because I feel like even though like Prince Hakim was like this royal figure or whatever, there was still a lot of like comedy that was to do with like his culture and identity. And so I did kind of go into this movie knowing that it wasn't, from that angle anyway, I wasn't really going to enjoy it because it would just be like more of the same. I think putting that aside, there were kind of funny moments, I guess, in this movie. Like, I'm not going to say that it wasn't funny and that I was like offended the whole time. And I do think also that we have to like kind of review this movie for what it is, as opposed to like what it like what we would like it to be. Like, this is not meant to be some kind of like, it's not Black Panther. It is Coming to America. And so yeah, like I think that there were funny moments. It was nice to see so many like Black actors from like this new generation, for example, like Kiki Layne and stuff, and like the previous generation, Arsenio Hall and all those people. And all the cameos were really cool as well.
Can I just say, like, when he turned around and he was just like, oh, sorry, can I cut in, Mutombo? And I, for a hot second, I was like, I was going to get very angry.
Yeah.
And then it was the basketball legend. Yeah. I was like, holy shit, like, that's so cool.
Yeah, there were like so many cameos. So it did feel very like celebratory, especially of like kind of more like African-American talent and like culture, I suppose. And I thought that Ruth E. Carter's like costume design and stuff was pretty cool. even though it was generically African in the same way that like Black Panther was generically African, in that it was like literally mostly West African with like a side of South African or whatever, like Afropunk kind of feel. Yeah, like it wasn't a masterpiece, but and we'll get into this later into the spoiler thoughts, but it was, I think it was like a good kind of like watch while you're doing something else type of movie. And yeah, just don't think about it too much before you get annoyed.
Yeah, you start picking at that paint and it's all gonna fall to pieces. Yeah.
So that's my generic general thoughts.
I'm gonna jump in because I feel like I probably have the least to say, because I just thought it was, we all know I have this thing for like kind of trashy films, or I won't call this film trash, but just films that are just whatever in it.
Mm.
And I feel like this was definitely one of those films. I did laugh a couple times. There were some times when it was funny, but then also sometimes it was inappropriately funny and quite like, this film was so, it just felt so dated.
Yes, absolutely, and I
asked Ram earlier, like, when did this film start production? I was quite curious, because it did seem like a film that could have possibly started production years ago, and that would make sense. Like when you hear a musician's art album that had been withheld for time and they finally release it, and you're like, this album sounds like it was when it was made. Yeah, yeah. Like Lil Wayne's Carter Five,
Duke Nukem Forever.
Exactly that. So it just felt so dated, and some of the jokes and humor was a bit like, okay, like
gross, like actively gross. It was a couple of moments,
and it felt like the film felt very American. I mean, it is American.
It felt more American though than the first film. I think that's I think the first film, even though I never really liked it, but like, I don't know, like even my parents really enjoyed it or whatever, and I can see like why, but this film just felt so, yeah. Which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but I think just like the fact that you're portraying not American.
Yeah, I mean, as British people, and I feel like a lot of, well, this might be a hot take, but I feel like Black British people are probably more in tune with their heritage. Yeah, well, yeah.
Like,
I don't want anyone to be like, getting triggered or anything. Yeah, it's fine.
Like, in terms of like our slang is still, and I think that, for example, you being Caribbean and me being like, there's a lot of like, we understand each other's cultures that are that's not as removed.
Whereas
it's not African American.
Exactly. A lot of us are like, well, I still eat this food at my house very regularly. Half of our parents are still like our actual immigrants or just second generation, as opposed to Americans being more. But this film, as a Black British person watching the film that's supposed to be about a fictional country in Africa, it just felt very American. And a lot of the, you know, like the cameos and stuff that like was it Salt and Pepper, were they in this?
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and those kind of cameos, it felt very like, let's celebrate America, like, kind of thing. And it's fine, but as a British person, I was just literally that, what's that meme of Mike from Monsters Inc. just staring at the screen with my one eye. But I really enjoyed Arsenio Hall and Eddie Murphy coming back together. I would have liked, even though it wasn't Eddie Murphy's film, you know, it wasn't about Akeem, it was about his son. A big part of why I liked the first film was because of Prince Akeem, and I wasn't, was his son Lamar, was that his name?
Yeah.
He was him as a protagonist, quote unquote, was a bit whatever for me. This sequel was very close to a reboot. It was almost a reboot, because it was like...
Or a remake.
Yeah, like it was retreading the same stuff too much, and it was a bit too similar for me, and in a bad way, even worse. It didn't improve it. You don't need to watch this film, is my honest opinion. Yeah. If you really enjoyed this film, and also I'd say if you're from a certain generation as well, I mean, we're not exactly young, but we're not really, we're all under 30. You know what I mean? I feel like,
fuck you, boomers.
Yeah, if you're a boomer. Yeah, but my mum's always been quite woke. But she didn't like the first one either, really. She did, but I feel like it definitely has a specific audience, which is those people that enjoyed the first one. And it was just, yeah, it was just by the numbers for me. It was just such a put this on the background and walk out the room and come back in the room. And it's, yeah.
It's still going.
Yeah. Right, honestly.
Let me jump in then, because like I think I'm kind of in between both of you guys, because there's a lot of this movie that just for me was very jarring, because it felt like if this movie had come out off the back of the first one, it would have received way more like way better fanfare and way better like understanding for like the humor and like how the jokes are delivered and that kind of stuff. It felt incredibly of like the 80s and not a movie of 2020.
Yeah.
2021 even.
Yeah, 2021, sorry. There's like the gender dynamics, like the racial dynamics, it felt so off and it felt so jarring being such a black movie that we're like sitting there and I'm like, these are the jokes we're telling about us. Like, it felt wild. Like, there's like the whole.
Someone said I had a daughter that was a son or something like that. And I was
in the
barber shop. Yeah, I was like, ooh.
Like, the whole, like, we're not doing spoilers. We'll get into that later. Like, the whole main conceit of the movie is deeply problematic. Like, they have, like, so many, like, cheap kind of payoff things where they, like, they'll do, like, some really, like, horrible, questionable stuff throughout the movie, and then they'll have like the payoff at the end where they're like, no, see, you were great and you were the right person. It's like, we've done this for like an hour of this movie where you've just been like, oh, you're a girl, no good enough. I'm like, given 5 seconds at the end, just that doesn't feel good. It felt weird to me. There were like some moments like literally had me like laughing. Like, I'm not gonna pretend like this movie didn't have like some good moments. There were some like genuinely funny moments, and like the barbershop in particular, that was a bad moment. Like, every time they go to the barbershop, because it was like
how were those guys still alive? I feel like they're kind of old in the first movie. It's like he's had like a whole, like, his oldest daughter must be like, I don't know, maybe 20, maybe 20 something. And okay,
I feel like when you get to an age, you just stop aging and you just get close to expiring, basically.
It's like you become freeze-dried after a certain point. This movie, like, don't watch it, because, like, if you like these movies, then you like it. If you don't, then there is no reason for you to watch this movie, as you said, anyway. Like, I really just don't think there's a point for this.
Well, you can watch like, the background while you're doing something else.
It felt like a paycheck as well, like a lot of the time. Like there's like so many like throwaway cameos and like so many like people just rocking in, or like famous friends of like Eddie Murphy,
they,
or whatever,
brought
like
Tiana Taylor in to have her do that same role of, sorry, no spoilers, sorry.
Oh my god, that was gross. Like that's the thing, right? Like every African like person and every African like cultural like moment felt like a 1930s representation of what an African culture would be. It was fucking wild.
I think that was my other thing as well, that it's like, again, I'm not expecting this, like there's a reason that they decided to make up an African country, but it almost felt a bit like what white people would stereotype Africa to be.
But really old school, like actively racist ideas are being like brought forward, and I was like, why? Why are we doing this?
I don't know. It was just a bit weird, because I also think that, like, for example, stuff like that's related to culture, you wanna make fun of it, you kind of have to be from that culture, like, you know, like when Africans make fun of certain African things, like Trevor Noah or whatever, like that.
No, but like he has the ability to do that. This is his culture. He understands. He lives it. He's able to express these things because he knows both sides of that fence. And it's not like a malicious thing where even like here where they're not trying to be malicious, those ideas are proliferated through this way. Like, I can't remember whose quote it was, but it's like such a true quote where it was like, the way that like bigotry and hate starts a lot of the time is through jokes. like these little allowances that we give ourselves that like build up and build up and build up. And it's like, we can't do that to ourselves. Do you know what I mean? That's the thing that bothers me the most. Like, we can't do that to ourselves.
I think that's why I didn't like the first comic to write. And I think, again, like comparing it to, well, I shouldn't really compare it to Black Panther, but I guess like if you are going to make up a country, at least like make up specific Zamundan, like, so that at least, you know, whereas this is just drawing on a lot of like lazy stereotypes and like archetypes from that people actually think or have said or whatever. So again, I know it's not meant to be a deep movie or whatever, but like it's a bit iffy.
You're right. I think what you said about someone making a joke or on their own culture is always going to be different than someone that's not in that culture making a joke about the culture, because even if it is innocent, you don't have the actual knowledge of that culture. You only have your perception and what you've kind of heard. And obviously there's a lot of, well, I mean, one of the writers was white guy, isn't it, really? I don't know how much research they do, but even African Americans, a lot of them aren't actually that, they don't know that much about some African cultures, unless we're saying African cultures, like say African countries. Yeah. So it's a whole continent.
And even within like one country, you got about 50 million tribes. So how are you supposed to, you know?
For real. Like it's absolutely untenable for me to like start making like Gambian jokes. Like, I'm Somali, I can't make those jokes. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
But like, go on, Hassan.
It's not fair for me to like turn around and start making Caribbean jokes either. And like, I don't expect like you guys to do that, but Somali people, because it's like,
you can make jokes about Jamaican, right? People.
Not me.
Saint is the best. On the flip side though, I also feel like this film was never going, it wasn't intending to like be like a window into African culture.
I'm not expecting it to be a Black Panther or to be a thing, but I'm just saying that the fact that you've gone far enough to be like, okay, we're gonna make up a country because it might be a bit iffy to actually base this in a real country, means that there's some level of awareness that you need to like remove it from like actual, because you're probably going to cause some kind of offense. So I just think they could have done little things to maybe make Zamunda feel a bit less like some generic pot or country of African stereotypes.
No,
like,
I fully agree, and I'm not even trying to defend the film. I just understand that films have their audience and they have their categories, if you get what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
Look at the Wayne films, those flipping dumpster fires that I kind of like.
I totally with you, like, because it's absolutely fair to like bad movies and understand them for what they are.
But you still have to,
like, like we still have to kind of unpack the things that we're watching as well, like, because that, like, that cinema apathy is bad too. Like, we can't, like,
and especially nowadays, like, when you have the scope to make so much, tell different stories and play around, we're in an age where people are a lot more receptive of more out there ideas and more out there concepts, and even down to just like cinematography and music, how you can make a film and still capture a wide audience with it. It just feels so like, what is this? It's like watching a generic Die Hard film in 2020. Let's be real, people, you might enjoy it, but there's going to be a level of nostalgia that's playing into that. If you take that out and look at the film objectively, it's kind of like
there's issues. There's always issues.
I think we can get on to spoilers. slap
on them spoilers.
Yes. So I've kind of like tried to do moments as opposed to, but you can like feel free to add in specific other things as well as they come up. So the first one was just how a lot of this movie just kind of wasn't very cohesive and didn't really make that much sense.
Almost feels like it was just a paycheck.
Like it was so lazy sometimes, like just and
sometimes
I think, well, a lot of the time. That was me being I'm being too nice. Just like a lack of sense. So, like, one of the things that I guess Levi, you can talk about this because I feel like you brought this up, but it was like, for example, Akeem's just inconsistency as a character from the first film to this film.
Again, I feel like everything could be argued another way, but, you know, I thought the whole, I mean, I have not watched the first film in a very long time, and I didn't rewatch it for this one because the premise is not something that you have to go and watch again. But if my knowledge serves me correct, Akeem's whole shtick was that he wanted to find someone that he really connected to. It was the whole, and also the wider thing of bringing change to Zamunda and XYZ. And then we come into this film and he's basically just filled the role of his dad. Well, his dad is still alive at the beginning as well. And it's
I'm so like, it blew my mind that that James Earl Jones was still alive. I was having a conversation before I watched the movie about the movie. And then someone was like, oh yeah, Joseph Jones. I was like, he's dead though, isn't he?
Morgan Freeman's still alive too, by the way.
He's in it. He's in it.
But like, yeah, he's now filling that role of like being the, what's the word? Like the stoic kind of traditionalist, while his illegitimate son is kind of, on one side his illegitimate son is kind of like coming in and shaking things up, but also on the other side his daughter is there and she's like, I'm capable, and he's like, you are a woman. But like, it's just like, what, like what, where?
And then they do, I guess, kind of bring it up in the head, I've forgotten her, the character's name, but the hairdresser lady, who's like, yeah, like, you know, he's forgotten who he is and stuff. But I feel like they could have paid a little bit more attention to like why he's forgotten, or like what happened for him to go from someone who like literally went against his family to like find a new path, and then like came back and just forgot about that he did all of that. And then it was like little things, like when he went to America, it was like he was he's already been to New York before, like he kind of knows what it's like, but he was just acting like he did in the first movie, so it kind of was like he had never been to America again. Like it was a bit weird. Like I was like, what?
Felt bad, man.
And then even just things like, I don't know, I guess like,
I mean, sorry, can I just, on that, right?
Yeah,
I don't know if this was in the first film, but homegirl raped him.
Yeah,
I was waiting to talk because I was like, that is
you know, when what you, the you know, when there's two types of sus, right? There's sus when you watch a film and you come away from the film and you're like, what was that? That was a bit off.
Mm.
And then there's that sus where it's like, that as soon as it happens, even before it happens, you're like, oh no, they're not gonna be. Oh my god.
Because they kept kind of alluding to what was going to happen, and I was like, they can't. He's a comedian, he's gonna subvert our expectations.
No.
They really done that, and it was
as the main conceit.
Just like of the, I mean, again, I don't know if that was in the first. I know that
it wasn't in the first.
So it was like a director's cut almost, yeah, type thing. So it's like, of all, how lazy do you have to be that you could not conceive another way for
to conceive?
Like, you know, like it was just, that was all types of off key for me. That was out of pocket for real. In 2021,
I felt mad gross.
And not even like coercion, like she literally,
no, she drugged him
and raped him. That is so wild, and it's never really ever
addressed.
Kind of,
it's not addressed.
And then like they're all cool with her.
Yeah. And did he not say she was a rhino? Was he not like, then I fended off a rhino or something stupid like that? I'm just like...
Oh, so fat phobia as well. And yeah, cool.
What is happening? Yeah, sorry, Ram.
No, that's fine. The lazy premise, which we already kind of talked about a bit, just being like a retread of the original movie, that it was lazily updated with some like, here's some feminism-ish, and here's some like...
Feminism where?
Right at the end. Literally five seconds right at the end.
The girls beat up the four guys.
With
the three girls beat up the four guys.
With the faux feminism.
Talk about you are not alone, Avengers moment.
Yeah, but at least, you know what, that I can forgive them, because for the rest of it, no, I can't.
I liked it in the first one, because Endgame,
it felt genuine. And the second one, it was like, here are all the women.
It's like, you might have forgot they're here, but here they are.
Oh, God. I guess in that, we can talk about the female representation in this film, which was terrible on all fronts. Where do I even start? First of all, the fact that the Queen, Lisa, did not really speak for a very long time, and I was unsure whether she would speak at all in the film, which kind of made me a bit worried, because I was like, she was literally just standing there to look pretty. The thing with Teyana Taylor's character, Bopoto,
oh my God.
Which, again, like...
Ew.
was just they literally did the same thing that they did with the original.
Yeah, by the numbers, like that one. Let's do that again.
Having an obedient, submissive wife and being like, yeah, that's what I do. You know, which is weird because I guess in the first movie that kind of was not a progressive message exactly, but it was. You could take it as like, okay, we shouldn't just want women who are going to do everything that we want them to do. Like, we should find someone who's, you know, actually thinks has an themselves. Opinion and, yeah, like, is independent of thought and all that stuff. But I think to, like, to retread that again in this movie was very unnecessary, especially because they focus so much on, like, how she, like, you know, they had that whole like dance bit and stuff, and like just like Teyana Taylor obviously being a very attractive, gorgeous woman, like
she baddie.
It was even more like just gross in general.
That was so prolonged as well, and it was just so unnecessary. Like I toned out, I went off, I walked out of the room, and I walked back in, and it was still going.
Oh my god!
I mean, I think that my main issue with it was. At least in, so it kind of goes into what is the plot of this film? Because in the first film, the submiss, and they still had her there barking from the first, in the second film,
which was horrible. Why do you bring her back to just bark for 5 minutes?
But like, that was an actual part to like, kind of springboard the plot into action, because he went, Akeem went to America specifically because he didn't want that woman as his wife. Mm-hmm. Whereas Teyana, being wanting to be Lamar's wife, it like wasn't it about him trying to get accustomed to African life, or is film about the daughter wanting to be the queen? What is going on? Yeah.
Was no anchor to this film, because I think we didn't really care about Lavelle very much.
Am I calling him Lamar? His name Lavelle.
His name's Lavelle.
Sorry. Lavelle,
are you a racist, Levi?
Yeah, I look the same.
We didn't really care about... I think this movie, if they actually were going to make it about a character, and well, this comes back into the female representation. Wait, I was just going to say one more thing about Teyana Taylor's character as well.
She bad.
That I think they were doing a very lazy thing as well, again, of like comparing, pitting two women against each other, because they were basically effectively pitting her against the hairdresser lady who's like, I'm an ambitious woman because I want to own a shop. Basically, versus, and I'm not trying to like, you know, but that's literally what they were doing, versus I'm a woman who will do anything for you. And that was their way of being like, the hairdresser lady is the lady you should fall in love with because she's got, but she was like, but she doesn't really have that much ambition, because she hasn't really, like, she said one thing about like that she wants to own a shop, like that's not enough of a, like, do you know what
she
I mean?
She has as much character development as Luffy. None.
It was just kind of a bit like lazy, like they obviously put her in there just as a, so that they wouldn't actually have to write a proper character for the hairdresser lady beyond the few lines that she uses to push Lavelle to be like, okay, actually this is how I'm gonna do things my own way, and like, actually I am in love with you. So that was a bit rubbish.
She's more of a MacGuffin than a character.
Yeah.
I feel like she was there just so that I can't even remember this film. At the end of the film, didn't he say he was going to try and help change some things as well?
Yeah, he became the ambassador.
So maybe she was there to like help him have that realization.
I mean, she was like, he literally, she went back to him, and then she told him the story about Prince Akeem, and then she cut off the rat tail. Good decision. and then, you know, she started talking about like, you know, wanting to own like a shop and stuff, and that he doesn't have to do things the traditional way, blah blah blah. I think also it was very weird to be like, I don't know, like the I don't know, the female representation in this movie just irked me a lot, because a lot of it was so like performative. I think it would have been more interesting even if the movie was more about Kiki Layne's character and her, you know, trying to make her father realize that she's the right candidate, which I feel like she didn't really try that hard to do either.
That happened, but we didn't focus on that.
Yeah, and I
feel like, which was stupid.
It's like, just look over here at this piece of crap while all of this stuff is happening in the background. You just turn around, it's like, okay, she's a queen now.
But also, animal abuse for plot.
Cutting off the lion.
Yeah, because like, you know, like their whiskers like help them with their like balance, and it's like that'll really mess them up. That's not a good thing.
It's also very savage. What kind of prince test is that? Like,
it's stupid. It's like, stupid and aggressive, man. It's like,
didn't mind that. Maybe I'm problematic. I just thought it was stupid. Like, yeah, and also actually, on even on that note, yeah, Kiki like just like they kind of made her like she was gonna be a foil for foil's sake.
Yeah.
But then she just all of a sudden was like, actually, I'm just gonna help this guy do what he needs to do. And I have this thing with Ram sometimes when I'll be like, did I miss something? Or did something happen that I missed? She just all of a sudden. Hey, cool.
Mate, that was the entire movie. Like, if you can boil it down to like one sentence, did I miss something?
Yeah. Essentially, yeah.
I think they really could have, and also that would have just anchored the plot a lot more if they had it focus more on her character, or even if like with Lavelle's character, if it was more like a reverse coming, like if they were, because the fact that he came from America to Zamunda. If it was more about him trying to fit into the lifestyle, like, I don't know, they just could have done a lot. There were a lot more other story points that they could have taken that would have been more interesting and would have made us care about the characters more. Because I feel like when I was watching it, it was that kind of like nostalgia rush, I guess, and just seeing like a cameo every 5 seconds like and being like, nowadays. Oh, cool, as opposed to it having an actual plot where you feel invested in a character or where you feel like you're revisiting Akeem in a new light or like, you know, Zamunda in a new light. Like, it was just very...
Can I just say two of the last things I'll say? I think we should move on as well, actually. Mm. After this, unless you guys have anything extra to add.
Nope. I'll add two. The faster we can stop talking about this movie, the faster I can forget it.
The two things I really enjoyed Wesley Snipes' performance. I was saying this for him. I feel like he was one of the few actually competent African accents, and
there was a generic,
but it was one of the few ones that is not like this. But
it wasn't Forest Whitaker.
Yeah. And his little dances, and I just love Wesley Snipes in this film.
He's incredibly like charismatic. Wesley Snipes, he's always been a good actor though.
Yeah. And James Earl Jones, I always say this to Ram, this guy, he never walked once in this film. Like, he just lay in his bed and then lay in his coffin like a gangster.
Mm.
The whole funeral scene, yeah, just that whole time I was cracking up. My man really sat in the coffin and watched his funeral and was like, that was good. I'm leaving the group chat. Just died. I love that. I
remember you guys originally described it and I was just like, that's ridiculous. And then I saw it and I was like, this is genius.
But that cracked me up.
Yeah, that's mainly what I have to say as well, I guess. I guess it was also very, I did like to see how it was like a celebration of like a lot of African-American like cultural icons and stuff, which I thought was cool. I did just think it was a bit strange because this movie is meant to be African. Is based in African.
We country. British. What about us, man?
We have to make our own film.
Put John Boyega in there all down.
Yeah, there was like in the whole movie. There's like probably like one actual African person, which was like Rotimi, who played Wesley Snipes' son, and he's Nigerian.
Oh,
for real? That was the only person.
Yeah, I feel like that was the only person. I might be wrong, but from what I can remember, he was. I was like, oh yeah, he's African. Like, and Trevor Noah, obviously.
Yeah,
I forgot Trevor Noah's in this. Yeah. They literally they scoured the A-list, like the celebrity phone book for anyone like passingly black.
Should we give it scores then?
Yes.
Mm. Oh, it's a five. It's
five as well.
I'm gonna say 5.5 because that cinema that funeral scene was just was just a 0.5 instantly for me. So yeah, 5.5.
Moving on.
If you like the first one, watch this one, I guess.
Actually, probably don't though, because it's about like rape and like the more I think about it, like.
All right. If you like the first one, it could go both ways.
If you like the first one, just watch the first one again.
It could be fun or it could ruin the legacy for you. I don't know what to say, guys. Flip a coin.
It was not a needed sequel. That's all I have to say.
Flip a coin.
Yeah.
There's worse sequels.
So on to the main event.
The actual Oscar.
We are going to talk about Judas and the Black Messiah. If you guys see my notes for this, you just know how.
What was he chanting at the speech? What was it?
I am a revolutionary.
Okay, because I was like, which speech? I am a revolutionary.
We didn't
need you. I am. All right, let me calm down.
Okay. This was partly produced by Ryan Coogler, my favorite. Everybody knows that if he wasn't married, I would marry him. Sorry.
Mike and Ernest and DM, I'm sorry.
That's fine.
And Charles D. King, who has production credits in Sorry to Bother You. The actual film was what's their names again? I literally forgot their names.
Brothers.
Yeah, by the Lucas Brothers. Yeah, the brothers. Had been wanting to make a Fred Hampton biopic for quite a while. And they approached the guy who directed Straight Out of Compton to do it, but then kind of like it, you know, didn't quite work out. And then they approached Shaka King after working on a comedy series with him, and he was quite intrigued by it. And then Will Burson, who was the screenwriter, had actually written a screenplay about Fred Hampton, but then him and Shaka King basically worked together to create a brand new script that became Judas and the Black Messiah. And it was actually the Lucas Brothers as well who had the idea of kind of having a film that focused on Bill O'Neill and kind of his side of the story, or well, not his side of the story, but having both of those things together as opposed to just a Fred Hampton story. Obviously they do intertwine, so we would have had O'Neill in there either way, but kind of framing it this way. It stars Daniel Kaluuya, the man who knows no misses.
My man.
As Fred Hampton, and Lakeith Stanfield as Bill O'Neill.
Has Lakeith Stanfield missed either, though?
No, he's amazing in everything I've seen him in.
It's just because I was going to say Daniel Kaluuya. Fine, the pair who I've never missed.
Yes. The dynamic duo.
Yeah. And then other people in it are Dominic Fishback, who plays Deborah Johnson, who is Fred Hampton's fiance.
Has she missed?
And she was only in Project Power, so I feel like we.
But she was the best.
She was.
She was. Lil Rel, who plays.
He was
a pimp.
Yeah.
A pimp.
Yeah.
Let's just say a pimp. who everyone knows quite well. Who was also in Get Out, actually. Jesse Plemons as who was in Breaking Bad and was also in Black Mirror.
He's in a bunch of stuff, and he's another like stuff. Phenomenal
yeah.
actor.
Yeah, yeah, I love him. Yeah. He's really like nonchalant, but somehow still a great actor.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's quite like ground, like yeah.
His delivery is just like it instantly kind of grabs your attention. Like even if he's not like making the biggest speech, you're like, yeah. I'm in.
He plays FBI agent Roy Mitchell.
Roy Mitchell. He looks like he could be a Mitchell.
He
brother.
Does look like
Fred Hampton. You're Ed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't mess with the Mitchells.
The American people, our American listeners are probably, who is Phil Mitchell?
Look up Phil Mitchell.
YouTube Phil Mitchell, EastEnders.
Pat.
Ashton Sanders, who was in Moonlight as Jimmy Palmer, and also Algie Smith, who is in Euphoria and The Hate U Give, as Jake Winters. So it was quite like a nice crop of like a lot of like old talent and new talent as well, which was like pretty cool to see. I
feel like just to say it's definitely like these guys have chops as well, whether they're new or as opposed to just being like
it's
a big
very
name.
Strong. Cast like from to the top to bottom, even the extras in the street were excellent.
All the side characters, like all the even like the tiny bit parts that kind of like flitted in and out, everyone nailed it.
Was fantastic. The music was also by Craig S. Harris, who's a jazz trombonist, and Mark Isham, who's worked on things like in Black Mirror, I think Point Break, and a few other things. And it's quite weird to actually have two composers for one thing, but I think the idea was that they wanted to do a lot of like jazz improv stuff, but because COVID hit, they couldn't really do that. So they just had the two of them work together as composers, which I thought was quite interesting. And the music in it, this was definitely like a highlight as well. So it was really nice to hear. I guess before we get into the actual film, it's already been picked up, you know, during the Oscar season. There is a bit of controversy Daniel Kaluuya and Lakeith Stanfield were both nominated for Best Supporting Actor. As opposed to one being in lead and one being in supporting, or both being in lead. So a lot of people had quite a few things to say.
I told Ren my theory.
The Academy kind of gave a lazy answer to just say that they've basically done this kind of thing before, when they can't really decide who's like the main actor or whatever. But I was like, don't think that's an excuse.
Bullshit. I'm calling bullshit.
I feel like the example you gave as well, that you showed me, it was not the same example. It was not the same. I can't remember what it was, but I remember that's not the same thing.
Yeah, so at least it's been recognized. Shaka King says he doesn't give a shit about the Oscars, we don't really care either. If you're gonna, it's always good, I guess, to get nominated for stuff anyway, just so that the movie gets more exposure. So I guess it doesn't really matter, like, and whether you win or whatever, like, it is.
And money and more opportunities come to these people as well. Unfortunately, the establishment does have benefits for people.
And a lot of this film also came off the back of Black Panther's success, because this film would have been really difficult to make. Not difficult to make, but difficult to get funding for, which they did actually struggle with in the beginning, but Warner Bros. Picked it up in the end, and that's why we have the movie here. And also there was a lot of backing from people like Charles D. King, who financially, popped up.
I'm just thinking, how do Warner Brothers give us Wonder Woman and then give us this within, 3 months of each other?
I don't know.
So anyway,
I keep forgetting that this is an audio medium and I'm just like making faces.
Hassan, visibly confused.
I'll put it in the soundbite. let's get into the film. Can we kind of get our first thoughts? Someone else can go first, because I feel like
I'll jump in.
Spoiler free, guys.
This movie is the best movie that misses the point, if that makes sense. I'm going to elaborate, right? I don't know if I'm reading too much into this, but it feels very sanitized. It takes away pretty much what Fred Hampton's messages, what his stance is, and what he was actually against with Edgar Hoover, and what the FBI were actually doing. He wasn't there to promote black capitalism. He wanted to burn it to the ground. And this film
these people doing it. There's
this kind of co-opting of the narrative to make it sanitized is fucking dangerous. And I really enjoyed this movie. It's one of if this wasn't a true story, it was just a movie, 10 out of 10, brilliant movie. But because of the juxtaposition between the reality and the history of this movie and what we actually get, it feels like propaganda. It feels like propaganda.
I mean, can I just say, I think what I agree with you in the sense that you can make content on racism or sexism or prejudices, but one thing that the machine or society doesn't really let you go against is capitalism.
Yeah.
And that they will always you could never make, I mean, I feel like Sorry to Bother You is probably the closest kind of we've got as a critique of the capitalist system and society, but I feel like because that film is kind of not real, it's fictional, it's okay. But when you talk about actual real people, where people will watch these films and maybe go and look into their manifestos or whatever they did afterwards, that one thing that you're right, Hassan, one thing they always try and sweep under the rug is that guy was a socialist, slightly. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
And not even just
King,
that.
Luther King is a perfect example. All we know is I Have a Dream.
Yeah, no, but if you peel it back a layer further, he was murdered because he stood against this machine, right? He was murdered by the establishment. And now we're telling a story that it was because he was fighting for giving kids meals. It's no, it was a challenge. It's deeper than that. It's so much more than just that one thing that they're pushing forward. Do you know what I'm saying?
I get like, what you're saying, but I think like, for me, it's like if you already kind of, I think this film, there's certain things that you cannot get funding for. So they're
of course
obviously going to like tone it down a little bit because that's not, they wouldn't be able to do that. And then I think also like a lot of this movie, and which is what the creators also said, and even kind of when they, because a lot of this, they did have to consult Deborah, well, she's known now as Mother Okua, and Fred Hampton Jr. I feel like a lot of it is, the people who are gonna watch this movie would pick up on those things. Obviously, it's not as like obvious as it should be, but you know, like feeding kids for free is a very social, like that is fits into so it's there. I guess it's more like if you were trying to convert someone who has no idea. But I do think that like the film makes you want to go and read about Fred Hampton. And I feel like that is it, you know, it doesn't really aim to like kind of educate you more on like his ideas, but to push you in the right direction to say, go and read more into
But like, but that's, but that's my point. It's like, you can't remove one from the other. Is my issue. Or at least you shouldn't, if you're telling a story of his life, you should not remove those two from each other.
I agree with both of you. But at the same time, I feel like unfortunately,
this is what we have.
Film wasn't going to tell that story.
Okay, right. Let me move past like that sorry, that's like my big proviso. Like I feel like I'm always the curmudgeon, just being grumpy. Like, we can't have fun.
Variety is the spice of life,
right?
The
movie is like, like the movie is like from like a story point, like a storytelling point, it's so brilliantly told. Like the way they like introduce the characters, the way they set up like the conceits, and the way they like play characters off each other, and they show like power dynamics shifting, is fascinating, and you instantly get hooked in. Like almost immediately you're like, I'm here, I'm with like the O'Neill story, I hate him but I can't look away kind of thing. And like you look at Hampton and you feel like the kind of the charge and the zeal, and like Kaluuya's put, this is like the greatest performance I've seen from Daniel Kaluuya. It's amazing. Like he absolutely nailed this. And like Plemons, oh man, I was like, if I could reach in the screen, like, yeah. But it was one of those movies that like I kept meaning to make notes, and I couldn't not watch it.
Like, this is what I said to Ram. I was like, I sat there and I just watched.
But that's why it took me about 4 hours to watch it, because I had to keep and then like write my thing and then like
go. I sat there and watched the whole thing. I put my phone down. I just sat there and I like, yeah, it was very captivating. But continue, Hassan.
Yeah, no, that's me. You guys,
You can go. Oh, I feel like I've got all round. I've got a lot. I mean, everything.
This is your general thoughts, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
Everything.
Do you
I
want
agree.
Me to go first?
No, that's right. I can. So everything Hassan said, spot on. I think all of the actors were amazing, but particularly again, I'm gonna definitely say Kaluuya. I mean, Stanfield was great as well, but obviously, the character that Danny Kaluuya was portraying, and he really got across that the charisma from that moment he walked in. We'll get to spoilers, but like I really enjoyed, like you said, Ram, as well, the score, the direction as well that was taken with the film. I really loved, and there were certain scenes that I really really enjoyed, and almost the accuracy as well. I think especially a lot of the times with these films, they kind of, you know, it's not really a bad thing, but for the sake of entertainment, they kind of take liberties. They might omit certain things or make things fantastical, but I feel like this film was surprisingly quite grounded. It was very educational, I guess the term
I think it was also very respectful, and you could tell like in a lot of the interviews that I watched with Shaka King, he was kind of talking about like the fact that a lot of people who were in the Black Panthers didn't really like talking to like outsiders or like researchers or academics, and so it's kind of difficult to actually track down the history of like of them as an organization. But you could tell that they had managed to get in contact with those people, and that, you know, that Fred Hampton's family were consulted about this because there was something very respectful in the way that they portrayed everything.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. Sure.
And also, like Hassan said, it was very gripping, and like I can watch a film and be mildly entertained, but it was an emotional roller coaster. I was very invested in like what's gonna happen next. Not spoiling, but shootout scene was tense, ending scene was tense. Like I was just like, even though this is like history, so you kind of know what's gonna happen, but still it kind of hooked me. And also I guess just the way the film was framed, and I was saying this to Ram, it was very much like, let's say outside of the capitalistic view or whatever, but it was a very objective kind of way of showing we have one organization, which is the FBI, trying to snuff out a very prolific member of another organization. It doesn't frame any organization as good or bad. And it also, it's like we are kind of civilians watching. I'm not trying to say FBI good, but you know what I mean? It's like we're just watching almost like two gangs trying to get at each other, thing.
I guess it did it more in a way of like, if you were at the time and you were in the community and you were not part of the Black Panthers, and you're just like, this is how you kind of
almost like without the propaganda, because if you was alive in those times, the news would have been telling you that the Black Panthers are trying to brainwash the children, that they're feeding breakfast.
No, that was their line. And that's how they used to break into them feeding the community.
No, exactly.
They would say it's indoctrination and training camps, essentially.
But exactly. So watching this film, it really felt like we was looking at outside of everything, all of that. Mm. And that kind of is, I don't know if you remember when I said last week how I watched this and then watched Falcon, the first episode, straight after. And then I was just like, this was not good versus bad. This was just this was like history or humanity sort of thing. And then watching Falcon, which is very much like a Disney thing, I was so like out of it.
I think, like, you know, like the human kind of element a lot of the time is lost, like with like historic figures, but like Lakeith's character O'Neill, like it's hard to remember sometimes, like, you know, when you're wrapped up in the story or in the watching, that he was a child when the FBI picked him up, and when they threatened him with, like, when they coerced him and bullied him into the position that he was in, he was a child. We can't get that twisted. Like, he's a little kid. Like, it's
very much about perspective. When compare to Falcon Winter Soldier, we're looking at it from, or just Marvel in general, or just certain things, we're looking at from a very capitalistic Western perspective of everything. Almost everything in the Middle East is bad, for example. Almost everything that comes out of Russia is you're going to be looking at it from a negative kind of light. And then I feel like this film, even though obviously the FBI are mad sus, and I say objective, but I lean on one side rather than the other, but it was just very, like I said, it was just very good at just being like, this is what this organization is doing, not because the FBI are inherently evil, but because we live in a capitalist society and the Black Panthers are disrupting the system that is currently in place, and they need to keep that system in place. Whether you agree with that or not, that's for your own personal decision.
we'll have this conversation later.
For me, I thought that the film was beautiful. I made many notes. I thought that it was beautifully framed. I thought that one of the things that I really loved about both the script and the direction is that a lot of the story was told like both in just like the camera angles that they used or certain like shots. For example, like when we first see the character of O'Neill, for example, there was a lot to be told about his character before he even spoke. And I think that's the same kind of thing that they did in a lot of the scenes. There was a lot of reward for each scene that we had that kind of fed into another scene, or that you got rewarded for a little bit later if you were like, well, you should have been paying attention, but you know what I mean. And for example, I mean, this is kind of a spoiler, but it's not really a spoiler, but I'm just going to say it anyway because I feel like it elaborates. But for example, when you had the FBI writing that propaganda where they were arguing about whether Fred Hampton says dig in or not, which he did not say dig in. Yeah. And then no, seeing that pop up again when they were meeting with the Brown Berets, but the stakes were higher and it was kind of like, a great example of illustrating, you know, like there's these white FBI agents joking around in office, and that had very real implications for them and their meeting and what Fred Hampton was trying to do. And I think that was one of the ways that they helped not to make the story centered around the FBI, but showed you the effects of what they were doing and how they were trying to kind of break down this organization
in these streets while they were sitting in their offices. And I'll go back to that in the spoilers, actually.
And but, I think that that was a great way of making this a very, like, Black-centric storytelling, which I think is one of the reasons that I guess I didn't really mind that, you know, we didn't get that kind of more gritty, like, kind of, not gritty, but, like, a bigger focus on the nefarious actions of the FBI, because I do feel like it was a lot more about Fred Hampton and Bill and why they did what they did and the essence of their characters. And I think that's really important when telling these kind of stories, because I think there's so much like trauma attached to these characters in terms of what happened to them and why they were in the positions that they were. And so it was nice to be able to almost get to know them in a way that wasn't centered around the, I mean, obviously the atrocious things that were happening around them did feed into their lives, but it wasn't so focused on that, if that makes sense. And you can tell that, like, it just, I don't know, in the storytelling, I thought that was really important to me. And yeah, I think that's something else that Shaka King actually talked about, because I think in early iterations of the script, they had like, is his name J. Edgar Hoover? They had, you know, the speech that he had, they had it at the beginning of the film, and they kind of like, nah, we can't start the film like that because it's not about him. And I think that was something else that I wrote down in my notes, actually, that a lot of the, like, the actions of, like, white people in this film were in the film for context as opposed to being centered. And I thought that was really important, again, in getting to know figures.
A lot of the FBI.
Yeah, like, it was, everything was, if it had to be in there, it was in there to, you know, give us more about the characters that we were actually watching the movie for.
Just to bounce off of that, I guess a lot of the FBI scenes, it was a lot of insight, so that when they do something, it's like, nothing personal, kid, almost like that kind of vibe. It's like, we've got this thing to do, and yeah. I am not defending the FBI.
No. I totally agree. Like, I'm not gonna, I was just being quiet because I was like super, like, I hadn't thought of that, like, from that way. Like, they did, like, the way they, like, kind of broke up the pacing in this movie was, like, super interesting, because they had moments where it could have just been, like, heavy exposition to, like, build, like, our understanding of what's going on, or, like, kind of what's coming next, or kind of how the plot was going to progress, but they did it in a way that, like, educated us about the context. Mm-hmm. And this movie needs context, and they did it really well. Like, they really did it well.
There's no big bad. I think we're too used to watching content where someone's either some jaded, misunderstood so-and-so, or just a pure evil so-and-so, but I feel like
twiddling the mustache.
Yeah, exactly. But the evil we face today, and I'm not gonna get on my socialist bag or my commie bag, but it's like, we it's just an endless machine that doesn't care about that doesn't care about anything except for, like, the bottom dollar. And I feel like those scenes where the FBI, like, where they, we'll talk a bit more about them in spoilers, where they talk, they basically break down why they're doing this little operation or that. And it's like, it's very cold, and it's not like that. You never really see these FBI agents, like, we're gonna get these niggers. It's much more like they're literally just doing their job, and it's just like, it's like a project to them almost. Like, do you get what I'm saying?
No, it is, because even like in that moment where this was one of the moments that made me really angry, but I think also really helped you kind of contextualize. I think what this film does that I really enjoyed is, like, shows you how systemic racism and kind of how calculated these actions are, and how I think it does the opposite of, kind of, not the opposite, but a lot of people think that racism is just getting called the N-word, and it's like, no, it's so much deeper than that. And I think this is what it this is a man who, or men who have been tasked with literally infiltrating and breaking down this community in any way they can possible. And it's not just about them, like, coming around, like, obviously, you know, there's like the violence of like shooting people and like killing people, but it is so much more
nefarious and insidious as well. Yeah. Like, I think is the word insidious.
There's always that level above that, that we all nowadays, everyone is very reactive and we see acts of violence on the street and no one really critically sits down and tries to prop it. Well, some people do, but like, let's say your average Joe that's on Twitter or whatever, they never sit down and think, why are these things happening? Like, what is the actual honest reason why things are happening? You know,
it's like, how do we get here?
Yeah, exactly. It is like, yeah. Is it a status quo thing or what's going on? But again, I think nowadays, because we're all, a lot of people are ingesting so much content, fictional and whatever, sometimes people do get taken away, but from like people, I'm surprised how much some people do not like think in reality, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Is it this when we talk about Eren on Attack on Titan?
there's a real like psychological thing here where it's like we want a bad guy, right? We want like a centralized head for us to kind of be against. We want like a clear delineation of like blame for the most part. Like, what can we blame our ill fortune or like our current situation on? And we want to see a clear thing that we can say it's that. Because if we can see it, we can combat it, right? But the issue, like a lot of the time, like, and I think one of the most fascinating things about like these kind of situations is it's a tapestry. It's not one thing. And it becomes way, way more difficult to unravel that tapestry if you're sitting in a position of like comfort on there.
Yeah. If the tapestry is wrapped around you and you're asleep.
Yeah. Okay, let's jump into the spoilers. I've kind of done again the same thing of so just feel free to add of like focusing more on like specific moments. And then I have my one con of this whole at the very bottom, which I should bring up.
I think my cons are out the way now.
Oh really?
I've had my proviso's out the way.
Can I just bounce back to that FBI scene now that we're in the spoilers?
Yeah.
I just thought it was really fascinating, the whole Sam situation, when he was his name Sam's? I can't remember. Sam, the other snitch.
Yes.
So that was
fascinating. Sam Henshaw, I think his name was.
Oh, yes, Sam something. And that's what I meant by the FBI scene of like, they knew he's a snitch, he's their agent, and they got him to plant distrust in the Black Panthers by labeling an innocent person as a snitch, then killing that person. And not only have you now shifted direction, blame away, like suspicion away from you, you've also created like a rift in the Kwai, because look what happened after when Lakeith was like, there's a snitch in here sort of thing. And also you've created an extra layer of depth of this person to you, because now you've kind of instructed him to kill someone, but now he's got a murder charge. So if you want to just put that guy away at the end of it anyway, you can do so. And also you have him on the line for longer, and I just thought that was very
it's deeper than that. They now have legal like recourse to then go and prosecute.
No, that's
like,
what I mean.
they innocent people.
If they want to, yeah, exactly that. Like, they have, and I just thought that was fascinating how one action can have such different, very different repercussions, but also leads into very different things. And it's just that sort of thing of, this is how the FBI works, and this is not, this is real life, guys. And then it's not just Black Panther.
This isn't a superhero movie. This is historical fact. Like, this is kind of, when like you're going, I don't want to say they're evil or not evil, I'm like, no, they're fucking evil.
They're evil. You know what I meant when I said that? Like,
I totally
actually
get it.
Actually, if a rich, I mean, I could argue every rich person is evil, but like a rich, someone who managed to make their coin and is very successful in the system would probably argue that the Black Panthers did need to go, because they were disrupting that status quo. And it's that kind of subjectivity that I really enjoyed in this film, that is kind of like not in like capitalism is so everywhere, but at the same time it's nowhere. And if you're not someone who is into like socioeconomic politics at all, you never notice these things,
of course,
in these films. Like you might, even something like Iron Man, for example, might lightly touch on, he sold weapons and these weapons nearly, but it's like, we need to, you know, maybe explore that a little bit more, but we never really do, because we all live in this Western capitalist society, so we kind of have to view
other... We live in a society.
No, oh, I had this conversation with Ram today. I did that. I wish I did it on air, but it's like anything that can fit inside the confines of capitalism. So things like, you know, racial equality to an extent, homosexuality to an extent. If it can work in capitalism, it's absolutely fine to champion. But if something inherently goes against that, because this is how rich people make money, literally off of free markets, quote unquote free markets, looking at you, Martin Shkreli. And that's when it's...
And you, Robin Hood. I'm looking at you too.
That's when it's an actual problem. And I don't know, after watching this film, I was just like looking around all jaded and stuff.
No, I'm with you.
I was going to say something, I've completely forgot. But I thought that the portrayal of Black women, and I will always come back to you this always, was brilliant in this film. I think that a lot of people, for some strange reason, and you can see this in Coming to America, don't know how to put meaningful representation into things. And I think also that a lot of, when we talk about race in particular, I think Black women do actually get forgotten about a lot of the time, especially in this like kind of civil rights period. Well, not quite civil rights, but like, you know, this kind of area of history, women just kind of, it's like they're just like either some silent like wife just in the background, or like, you know, their stories don't really get told. And through this movie, I actually found out that at the Black Panther Party's like peak, like the party was like 60% women, which you would have no idea from the way that they talk about the Black Panther Party. Mm-hmm. And I thought that Deborah Johnson's character and Dominique Fishback was brilliant in this. And I thought that they had so many conversations between Black men and Black women that we don't really get to see, you know, as much on screen, and also even just down to seeing other members of the Black Panther Party who were women, like holding her gun like in that shootout, just like, you know, doing her thing.
She was ready.
But also seeing, like, you know, the women who were just helping like with the phone lines and stuff. And I think it was just like it really helped to build a realistic idea of what this community actually looks like. And also I think for me, it was like the relationship between Fred and Deborah, as she was known at the time, and that conversation that they kind of had about, you know, him being able to say, I'm going to give my body to this cause, and, you know, and her being talking about, like, you know, the implications of her bringing a Black child into this world and not feeling like she's going to be a good mother because, you know, she's brought her child into a war zone effectively. And I don't know, like, I just thought that conversation was beautiful here and also very important. And I think they did a really good job in all of their characters of making sure that everyone kind of got their story. And I think that was really important, but it really just resonated with me when it came to Deborah Johnson, and also her poem, which Dominique Fishback wrote herself, particularly the line, "We educate, we lobby, we nurture." I thought that, kind of focusing on the fact that the Black Panther Party was so many things, it wasn't just one thing, was important. And it kind of brought me back to you a line that Jake's mother says. So Jake gets like shot in the film after he kills a police officer, after retaliating because one of his friends from the Black Panther Party was killed by the FBI,
taken from the hospital and murdered.
And his mother says, like, you know, he did kill the police, and she says he did that, but that ain't all he did. It doesn't seem fair that that's his legacy. And that line was just so, I don't know, it just really stayed in my head, because I think that's literally what happens to a lot of like Black leaders, even like, you know, Martin Luther King, whether it's in a good way, good in quotation marks, or bad way, you know, the Black Panther Party were never portrayed for everything that they have done because of the image that the powers that be wanted to push. But, you know, on the flip side, we have people like Martin Luther King, whose whole message didn't get spread because they decided that, you know, he was progressive enough and white people wanted to use him just to say, I have a dream, and bring him out once a month on Black History Month, when, you know, he was more than that one speech. So I thought that was really, I don't know, an amazing line. I think one of the things that I enjoyed and also hated about the movie was kind of the way that they signposted O'Neill's moments where he could have changed and done the right thing. You know, for example, when he went up to the roof and kind of saw that he couldn't like move, he could have picked up a gun and decided to start shooting, but he did not. When
you ain't about that, like, yeah, I think we that know was the biggest
I think that's of, what like... yeah, but I think that, you know, sometimes we're so used to like this kind of redemption arc, and he doesn't have that, and
yeah, which is so real, like it really kind of nailed back that this isn't a fantasy story, that this is like, these are real human beings, and real human beings make mistakes. The happy stories aren't always like guaranteed.
Exactly. And I think also kind of back to O'Neill and Hampton's kind of contrast with one another, there was a lot that you got from both of them and the way that they were kind of juxtaposed. So kind of the dynamics that I saw were kind of like the snitch / the coon versus the freedom fighter. I wouldn't quite call him a coon, but you know, in this, yeah. You know?
I guess, I wouldn't say coon. I feel like it's literally, when you look at society nowadays, you get, especially in like the Black communities, no matter where you go, whether you're in Britain or probably even Africa as well as in America, you always get those people that are always trying to, fight for injustice and want to lift up the Black people, but also most Black people, they just kind of be like, well, we got what we got, like leave me alone. Like down to music, you have conscious rap music, which is usually the minority, and the most loudest music is just that kind of what some people call ignorant, just a loud noise, and that's what most people resonate to, because most people, it's people,
they don't like, want to think, they want to like just have that escape them.
Come somewhere, and I think people, if I think more people in that situation would comply than would die. I'd always say to my friends all the time, like, people will say they have views, but are you going to die for your views? Will you die for what you believe in? And most people won't. Like, we're so comfortable nowadays, you don't even feel oppressed. You'd be like, you know what, I can still work, I still have nice trainers, maybe I will kind of submit. And that's what I think O'Neill was. He was a young, look, they caught him boosting cars, do you know what I'm saying? He was a young person that had this scheme to steal cars. All he cared about was himself.
He's a young scared kid, like, and they preyed on that.
Yeah, and he didn't give it. I don't think he ever wanted to be white or anything like that. He just
he's literally just, it was like self-preservation, like he just wanted to not go to prison.
I was just gonna say, I think that was another dynamic as well, of kind of seeing someone who's an individualist and is focused more on, you know, self-preservation, as you said, versus someone who is a collectivist and is willing to do anything that's going to push the boat forward. Also the capitalist versus the socialist, because, you know, O'Neill was making money, and he made about 200,000, I think, for all the work that he did with the FBI. One scene as well that really stood out to me, in terms of like kind of capturing the heart of Hampton's kind of ideology, was when they were forming the Rainbow Coalition, but particularly the scene where they walk into the meeting with the young patriots. And you know, there's that tension between Jimmy Palmer's character and kind of, you know, like obviously walking into this church that's got like a Confederate flag on the wall. But I thought it was a very important conversation, and I think one that people need to take away in real life, of like, we need to look at the bigger picture sometimes. And yes, they had like a flag that was very offensive to Black people, but actually they were like, you know what, they said this flag is something that reminds of our history. You know, Jimmy Palmer said, well, you know, I don't want to be reminded of that history, but actually, you know what, we're both anti-capitalistic, we both have something, we're both being like, you know, oppressed and divided by the same system, why don't we work together? I don't like your flag, but like, it's bigger than that tiny conversation. That is like one little thing that we don't need to focus on right now. And I think that that's the reason a lot of people these days from opposing sides can't have conversations, because you fixate on the tiny little things that are different. And it's like, actually, you know what? That doesn't actually matter. That's not going to stop you from sleeping at night. You know, like, and I think in my research as well that I did, like, a lot of the Black Panthers were saying, I can't remember his real name, but the man known as the Preacher who led the Young Patriots, you know, they were like, he's one of the best human beings I've ever met in my life. And it's like, you wouldn't have been able to even get to that point if you couldn't get over the fact that there was a Confederate flag hanging on the door. And so that scene was,
I think it was perfect. Can I just say, like, one thing, like, just to kind of combat my curmudgeon nature? It's like, there's always going to be, like, more that we have in common with each other than things that divide us. And it's like, it's very easy to, like, to have, like, a negativity bias and, like, focus on the things that, like, divide us. Mm-hmm. Like, next time you're kind of in a conversation and you're, like, ready to start, like, throwing down, right? Mm-hmm. Stop and ask them something about what they actually like and what they actually like something positive, you know what I mean? Like, try and find, like, a level ground to kind of approach each other rather than holding on to the things that make us hate each other.
Cultivated identity, guys. Unfortunately, it's a thing. People define themselves by what teams or what camps they're in. If you're team Mike, if you're team Aaron, sorry. If you're team Marvel or DC, this is unfortunately the society we live in social media, where this is people can't be like, I'm shy or I like this. You have to people literally identify themselves by these brands and these companies, and that is what causes segregation. And I think that is the biggest thing of what made Fred so dangerous, is that he had these people that traditionally the FBI and the government had already had these things in place that they are already going against each other, and he was out here disrupting that, and they needed to get things back to how they were going. I mean, God, my American history is really bad. Wasn't this just before the crack epidemic, or was
that was the 80s, I think.
Yeah, so it was just before. Yeah, so you see what they did after Fred was gone, to kind of, you know,
make sure
suppress, you know, put people back where they were before, sort of thing. And I think it's fascinating that people still want to argue online, and you can literally see what your government did to keep you oppressed and separated from each other, and they only do it usually in response to when people are rising up and getting together. But people nowadays, there's too much, there's so much distractions, TikTok, Instagram, all of this stuff. People, you know, I guess this is the dangers of the internet. The information is everywhere, but they've put a million different distractions here, there, and everywhere, so you don't do your research. But yeah, back to the film. Has anyone else got anything?
I've just got two more things, and then anyone can bring it. So my one con of this movie was, in a way, I do wish that they had either highlighted more the fact that both Hampton and O'Neill were so young. I think it was quite hard to do if you don't know anything about the actual characters. It would have been quite hard to realize that just looking at the actors, because they do both look quite old. And I think that it would have been even more hard hitting to realize that Fred Hampton was killed when he was 21 years old, and that O'Neill was making all of these actions when he was, like, in his late teens, early 20s, and that is a big part of probably why, you know, like, he was quite apathetic and didn't really actually like care about what he was doing, or you know, didn't think of, like, the wider implications, or, you know, just in general why absolutely. He did what he did. So that is one of the things that I wish that either they highlighted more, or perhaps, I mean, obviously I love Daniel Kaluuya and Lakeith Stanfield, so I don't really want to say change the actors, but, like, you know, that kind of thing of, like, it would have been
different to see, like, children in these roles.
Exactly. And the other thing that I wanted to, I love the fact that we didn't see Hampton get shot, because I do think that, again, like, you know, Black trauma is a real thing, and especially, like, you know, we know that he dies, and, like, but just not seeing that white man shoot him in the face was saved a lot of heartache.
There's, like, so many, like, things in, like, media now where we just see Black people getting shot left, right, and center, right next to the reality of, like, Black people getting shot on the news, and it's there's a lot. Like, it's a lot.
You can avoid it. Let's just avoid it. Yeah, I think that's mostly it from me. Does anyone else have anything?
Hassan, you got any thoughts? We need to wrap this one up.
my last, like, my thoughts in, like, kind of in kind of conclusion is, watch the documentaries about Fred Hampton, in particular the one with O'Neill, actually hearing him speak on the subject and, like, actually seeing him grapple with it is, yeah, no, do it. just do it.
Yeah, let's not forget O'Neill did not end on a win.
He committed suicide.
Interview, and I think they aired it on Martin Luther King Day, which they told him he wouldn't, and he killed himself. So he had to live with that for the rest of his life.
Yeah,
at the age of 40. And also, don't be an armchair revolutionary. Sorry, that was like one of O'Neill's words, and I just really like that. So that is the end of the review. What are we rating it?
This is a 9.
Yeah, 9.
This is a 9.5.
Yeah. I don't give anything. Actually, you can get a 9.5. I don't give anything. And if I did have in the past, I lied.
Wicker Man is a 10. Nicolas Cage Wicker Man is a 10.
I think it's a great film, and I think you should watch and also do research. Guys,
I think if you watch it, it will make you want to research.
Yeah.
It is a great jumping off point if you don't know anything about Fred Hampton.
There's a lot of black revolutionaries that are not Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, like Garvey and Dubois. There's loads of and Fred Hampton. It's always good to get a wider perspective of what people were doing for Black rights and just Black progression from different angles and ideals. But yeah, 9 out of 10. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. So what is everyone
on? Nah, let's. You know what? We haven't got time. Hassan, just to talk about some things quickly to make the people them aware, Attack on Titan finale is here by the time this drops. Also, My Hero Academia, the new season.
No. It's ending on a cliffhanger. They're coming back with another season.
They're going to come back. Yes. So, guys, if you're on Attack on Titan, go check that out. My Hero has just started as well. That's good.
Start off shit. It's a filler.
Yeah, in good tradition. And also, Invincibles has started. Invincible has started. I think they dropped the first 3 episodes. Hassan, do you want to talk a little bit for like a minute? Elevator pitch.
It's... I can't say anything without it being monumentally spoilery. It's very, very, very good. Highly recommend this one. Just go in blind. Just start one episode, and you will not stop until you finish all of them.
I saw a bit of the scene when Omni-Man. Yeah, I seen it. yeah. Sorry, man. We're over time, so yeah.
Cool.
Okay.
You can find us on the Nerd Alternative at on Instagram. At the Nerd Alternative, on Twitter at the Nerd Alternative without an E after the N, and the same on Reddit. And you can listen to us on Anchor Podcast, Spotify Podcast, Apple Podcast, Google
Breaker, Podcast. Google Podchaser,
everywhere.
Please follow us and review us,
And review us. Yes,
cool. Okay,
5 stars.
Okay, guys. Yes. Bye.
Until next time. See ya.
This is Wine, Dine, and Storytime. I'm Nydia.
I'm Dana.
I'm Cindy, and we're your hosts.
Have you ruined a family gathering by asking what wine pairs well with eating a husband?
Are you the CEO of TMI?
Have you ever been kicked under the table because you brought up your favorite dinner topic, atrocities throughout history?
Then this podcast is perfect for you.
Each week, Dana and I share stories based on topics that include true crime, historical shenanigans, unexplained mysteries, and all things fascinating, while our amateur chef, Cindy, prepares themed dinners and pairs wines based on those topics.
Find us, the Wine, Dine, and Storytime podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, and give us a follow.